I'm Emma Judd and welcome to The League Cast, a podcast from the League Against Cruel Sports. Each month, I'll be joined by friends and fellow campaigners to talk about all things animal. The Hunting Act 2004 came into force 17 years ago on 18th of February 2005, yet hunting with hounds continues today. This series explores the years since that infamous day and hears accounts from those closely connected to the Act. Today, I'm joined by Chris Luffingham, Director of External Affairs at the League Against Cruel Sports, and somebody who's had a long history of political campaigning. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, good to be here.
So, talking about the Hunting Act, I think a lot of people listening to the League Cast today probably know what that is, but they might not necessarily understand totally what the problems are with it. So, could you walk us through what they are?
Well, it's probably the one piece or the one area that both those that are pro-hunt and those that are anti-hunt agree on, and that's the Hunting Act isn't fit for purpose as far as they're concerned. I mean, I'd obviously like to see the repeal of it, but it exists. But we, as an anti-hunting organisation, think that it's not fit for purpose. It doesn't work in any way, shape or form. When the Act was brought in, there were a number of exemptions that were added to the bill, and those effectively mean that hunts can continue as they were pre-ban. Those exemptions mean that the Act is not really worth the paper it's written on.
So exemptions really being loopholes, the things that the hunts can exploit to get away with, as you say, you know, pre-ban levels of hunting. Can you talk us through what some of those are?
Sure, exactly. They're loopholes, and specifically, there are a number of loopholes. There are a number of exemptions, but just to kind of go through a couple of them, there's the research and observation exemption, which allows stag hunts to chase and hunt stags and kill stags for the purposes of scientific research, and yet there hasn't been a single piece of scientific research that has ever appeared, and yet the research and observation exemption is used frequently by stag hunts when they are brought to court, and is often a reason why they get off on charges of illegally hunting through using that exemption. There are other nonsense exemptions in there, like the falconry exemption that allows you to carry a bird of prey to kill a fox once it's been flushed out. Obviously, that's just a ridiculous notion. It's never going to happen. And yet, it's an exemption that exists in law, and those hunts that then deploy or use that exemption and have a bird of prey along with the hunt can use it and get off scot-free.
And let's mention trail hunting, so-called trail hunting. I have to put inverted commas around the word trail because we as an organisation don't believe it exists. And this is something that the hunts invented after the Hunting Act came in, whereby the hounds follow, they say, a artificial scent, but a scent that is based on animal scent, so fox urine, for example. It's not mentioned in the law, but it's something we talk about a lot. So how do they use that? You know, what is trail hunting for them?
Well, as you said, trail hunting was something that was constructed after the ban, and it uses these exemptions to circumnavigate the law and also to really hone in on the intentionality aspects of the law. In order to prove somebody has been illegally hunting, you have to also prove intentionality, that they meant to chase a fox or a mammal. And that's exceptionally difficult, particularly if you say, this is their argument, that those hounds were chasing an animal-based scent or a scent, a trail that was laid. That's what they were chasing. And it just so happened that the hounds picked up a different scent, a live scent, and then ended up chasing an animal, a fox, by accident in the pursuit of following out the trail that we laid. Now, it starts to get into quite technical territory quite quickly when you start to then kind of talk about drag hunting and the difference between drag hunting and trail hunting. Drag hunting has been around for about 200 years. Existed way, 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 way before any ban was even imagined. And they lay a trail. They have a trail layer who sets off, and the master of that drag hunt will know exactly where that trail has gone. They do not lay a trail near habitat that is likely to contain foxes or deer or any other some such mammal. There is no danger or very, very little danger, and the incidences of animals dying through the pursuit of a drag hunt are virtually non-existent. And yet we have trail hunts which purportedly lay down a trail, but they will often lay a trail near where and through habitat that contains mammals and where they know foxes are living, and so they can lay that trail there. And if a foxhound accidentally were to happen upon a live animal scent, it would be very, very hard to differentiate between whether they were following the trail that has been laid for this hunt or whether it's a live trail. And so they just continue. And more often than not, as we would say, trail hunting is just a fiction. It's a smokescreen, as has been said in court. It's designed to obfuscate and to confuse and to lay as much doubt in the minds of everybody watching what exactly is going on. Now, we know exactly what's going on because we've been watching trail hunts since they came in, since they were invented post-ban. So we know what's going on. And everybody else that has knowledge and is interested in the subject knows what is going on. But to a general member of the public and judges, to be fair, when they're looking at these cases, it can appear exactly as it's designed and has been manufactured to appear, that it was just an accident. We know that not to be the case because it takes quite a lot of nous and quite a lot of knowledge to be able to unpick all of that. But that was precisely the point when it was created, and trail hunting was used as a way to as closely replicate what they were allowed to do pre-ban.
And the league has long called for the Hunting Act to be changed to try and ensure that these ways that have been introduced or created to allow old-fashioned illegal hunting to take place are properly stopped. What would those look like? How can the Hunting Act or different legislation be introduced to properly end hunting with dogs in England and Wales?
Well, for a start, we can take away all of those exemptions. just remove all of those exemptions, you'll go a long way there. I think that in terms of other things, there's also the fact that a breach of the law currently is likely to end up with a fine and not a very big one at that. So there's actually not really very much in the way of a deterrent. And we would argue that actually by imposing custodial sentences on illegal hunting, that if you are found to be illegal hunting, you're going to end up in prison. Then that would also have a massive effect and a massive impact on those people who think that they can go out and get away with hunting and nobody will catch them. Well, actually, if you take away the exemptions and you enforce potentially a custodial sentence to go with that, then it becomes a much more serious matter. And you've got to pause for thought as to whether you really want to go out and do this to start with, if the penalties are going to be so tough. Also, I mean, there are things like vicarious liability, so that those people that enable hunting to take place are also caught by the law. So if you're facilitating hunting in some way, that you will also be subject to the law. And also things like being in control of hounds, I think, is one of the most curious things, that if I were to take a pack of 20 hounds up the high street outside the office here in Godalming, I don't think it would be too long before a police officer turned up and said, not sure that's really a very good idea. And it would be in breach of all sorts of bylaws and highways acts, I'm sure. And yet hunts are able to take out a pack of hounds with almost no issues of being caught or being stopped in their tracks by doing something like that, and having hounds that just wander all over the place and go willy-nilly wherever they like. I mean, we've had reports every year we have reports of hounds on roads, hounds on rail tracks. I think a couple of years ago we had hounds down a well, because if you're laying a trail, how could they possibly end up on a major road or a rail track? And yet that's seemingly allowed and permissible because the law is very complex and people don't understand it, and therefore it's really hard to prosecute it.
I think in my time at the league, the most shocking place that the hounds have been when they run amok through a churchyard around gravestones while there were mourners there. A funeral was taking place and the hounds ripped straight through the churchyard. I mean, a trail cannot have been laid through that churchyard, surely.
And a primary school. What else have we had? We had a primary school, had a llama farm, cattery, primary school, railways, major roads, frequently every year. See, multiple times per year that happens.
And that kind of brings the llama farm was quite a shocking one as well, because I believe the animals were actually pregnant, and there was a risk that the stress from the dogs coming through, from the hunt coming through, would have caused, unfortunately, those animals to abort their pregnancies. And, you know, that is livestock worrying. That is a proper impact on wildlife and the rural community which the hunts purport to serve.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's not forget Minnie the cat, a cat picked up by a hound and basically shook and ragged to death. And the huntsman, yes, he was convicted. Huntsman throwing that dead cat over the fence into the back garden. The level of behavior is shocking on any level, and it wouldn't be allowed in any other walk of life. But apparently and seemingly that if you're a member of the hunt and these things happen whilst you are in the act of engaging in hunting, trail hunting, or whatever they want to call it, then that's allowed.
So, I mean, the Hunting Act came into force in 2005. Confusingly, it's called the Hunting Act 2004, but it wasn't until February of the next year when it actually got royal assent and it began. How has the political feeling changed with the main parties from then and now when it comes to recognizing its weaknesses?
Yeah, it's in some ways it's a really simple question to answer. In other ways, it's massively complex. Very simply, we're light years ahead of where we were in 2005. And actually, we're light years ahead of where we were just as recently as 2010. As of the last election in 2019, there was not a single major party that supported repealing the Hunting Act. There is no longer anybody that thinks the Hunting Act should be repealed from a political perspective. And that is a significant step forward. There's only really one party that thinks that actually the status quo is okay, and that's how it should remain. Up until 2019, the Conservative Party had been actively campaigning to repeal the Hunting Act. So an acknowledgement that the Hunting Act is here to stay is quite a step forward. It's quite a significant shift and a move forward. And since 2019, I don't think there's anybody left that doesn't think that hunting is a toxic issue. We now know. I mean, we've seen it two, three times since 2019, shortly before 2019 and the leadership election between Boris Johnson and Jeremy Hunt, that if you mention hunting, it's bad. As soon as you mention hunting and you mention the Hunting Act, people run for cover in terms of politics. It's just a toxic, toxic subject. Nobody really wants to discuss it. And it does, frankly, amaze me that people still do bring it up in open public debate as something that might be a law that we want to repeal, because every time that happens, the inevitable backlash follows and they have to quickly reverse and do a U-turn and end up having looked really, really foolish. It has happened again and again. I think we're probably past that point now, but I wouldn't put it past any politician to say something stupid at any moment in time. But I think we're probably past that. And if you acknowledge the fact that we've come from the government or the party of government, the Conservative Party, having moved and shifted its position to one of neutrality, a status quo, and that reversing that decision back to what it was in, say, the 2017 or earlier 2010 election of wanting to repeal the Hunting Act, then it's one-way traffic. There's only one way to go, and that's strengthening the law. And it's just a matter of time, really, before we get to that point. Now, it depends how much of a fight people, political parties, want to put up, and they want to kind of maintain the kind of status quo and ineffective law, or whether we're just going to cut to the chase and we'll actually just sort this law out once and for all and do what's intended. I think it's one of the few examples that I can think of where we have a law that everybody agrees doesn't work, but and yet we don't do anything about it. If this happened in any other area, then what we do in this country is when a law doesn't work, we go back and we fix it. And we say, all right, okay, that doesn't work. And we'll strengthen it in these different ways and bring in more ways in which we can make this law fit for purpose and achieve the object that we set out to achieve. A really simple example, mobile phones and the use of mobile phones in cars. That using a mobile phone in a car whilst you were driving was perfectly allowed, and that was within the law. Until we realized that actually that wasn't such a good idea, and being distracted on the phone whilst you're driving with it in your hand was bad. So he brought in a law and said, you can't do that anymore. It didn't work. It didn't work. It wasn't strong enough. It wasn't as much of a deterrent as it needed to be in order to stop people doing it. So he went back and strengthened it and said, actually, you're not allowed to touch your phone. You're not allowed to touch your phone anymore. Not at all. If you do that, then you're in breach of the law. And all of a sudden, that behavior then became the accepted behavior. Why we don't do that with hunting, I have no idea. Because if we are in the position that we're now in, where there is acknowledgement that the Hunting Act is here to stay, there isn't anybody that is going to tell you, pro-hunt or anti-hunt, that the law is fit for purpose, so go and fix the law. It's the only logical conclusion.
And how is the league working to get the law fixed? You know, how do you even go about trying to secure legislative change like that?
Well, we've got a number of different ways, and some are more public than others. We are constantly in negotiation and talk with anybody that will listen to us in Westminster about how we can go about fixing broken laws, and what we might be able to do, and also looking at ways in which we can curtail hunting practice, but not directly through the Hunting Act. So, you know, we've recently run a whole series of campaigns against landowners, in particular National Trust being the most prominent of those, and ways in which we can restrict the practice of hunting by doing associated things. So if you take the land away that they have available to hunt on them, they're not going to be able to hunt. The most public way that we get involved with this sort of stuff is around general elections, and general elections being the time, as anybody knows that has a front door, general elections are the time when politicians like to be seen to be doing things and like to make commitments to do things, and knock on people's doors and tell people that they're going to do things. And general elections tend to be the occasion when you can move opinion faster and further than any other point of time in the year, because people are looking, and people don't generally like to do things that they know are going to make themselves really unpopular with those people that are going to vote for them. So we quite look forward to general election time, when general elections come around, because it means we have an opportunity to move the dial more than at any other time in our calendar. So we need to take advantage of that. And whenever a general election comes around, you can be sure that we are going to be out on the front foot and doing as much as we can to ensure that hunting specifically remains in the spotlight and has as high a profile as it possibly can when it comes to election time.
And I mean, with the leadership election for the Conservative Party going ahead as we are talking today, a general election could be any time really between the end of this year and May 2024. So what could, for people who are listening to the LeagueCast today and wondering how they can help us and the other organisations campaigning to properly end hunting, how can they help us? What can they do? What should they be looking out for?
Well, I mean, when a general election comes around, there will be all sorts of things that people can do, and we will provide the help and support and guide and potentially resources to enable people to help us with that campaign. But very, very simply, like I said, you know, candidates like to knock on doors when it comes to election time. And one of the best things that we can do, regardless of whether it's knocking on door or you see a politician or a candidate standing for election anywhere, is ask them the question. Get them on record. The more candidates and therefore people that are going to be elected we have on record, then we can hold them to account. And we have a parliamentary system in this country, which means you are voting for your MP, your councillor. You're not voting for the party. You're not voting for the leader. We don't have a presidential system. We have a parliamentary system, and that means that that individual is elected to represent you. So the best thing you can do is be as difficult, noisy, persistent with those candidates that want your vote. Your vote is extremely valuable, particularly in these days when there are multiple political parties fighting and it's very, very close in a number of constituencies. Get them on record. Get them to state definitively what their opinion is, and don't be fobbed off with a generalization, because there are lots of things that we can't change. Can't change the economic environment. Can't change the cost of living crisis or the war in Ukraine. But there are things that we can do. And if we can do them, then we should do them. Yes, there are other important issues, perhaps more important issues than this. But we can do something about this as a country, as an elected government, as a council, as a board of governors are the National Trust or National Park or whatever it happens to be. There are things that we can do. So we should do them.
Chris, it's been really enlightening speaking to you today. So thank you ever so much for joining us on the LeagueCast to talk about the Hunting Act and what we're doing at the League to move the dial, as you say. Thanks so much.
Absolute pleasure.
That's it from this month's episode. We would love for you to get in touch on our social channels with any questions that you might have had, though. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram by searching for The League Against Cruel Sports. Please also make sure you subscribe to the LeagueCast so you never miss a single episode.